Well, Jonathan Lucroy is the first player that I have beef with in the 2015 season. He already ruined our catcher preview, guys.
That's reason to be very, very angry with him.
At least I'm not a Brewers fan. Now, it's only 4 to 6 weeks. We'll talk about it in just a little bit. Welcome to the podcast. It is Thursday, the 12th of February. You might be hearing this on Friday. We're recording pretty late in the day. So have a great three-day weekend, everybody. But this is a mailbag show, fantasybaseball at CBSi.com. I am Adam Azer with Al Melchior. Hello, Al.
Hello, Adam.
And Scott White, who plays with tape measurers, as we learned yesterday.
I do. There's none right here.
They
child-proofed the room before I sat down, so that's good.
I can play with it now. I see where it is.
Uh-oh.
I still have one first baseman I'd like to talk about a little bit more in depth. I hear the tape measure in the background. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it was just placed next to me, so I guess they don't really care about my well-being in here.
I have a surprise for you guys in just a little bit.
Oh, love those.
Mm.
And what have you gotten your significant others for Valentine's Day?
Well, what if she listens?
Does she? Oh.
You never know.
Okay.
She watches our video show.
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, that might be the extent of it. Okay, fine. You don't have to say. Scott, how about you?
What did you get? What are you getting yours, Adam? You got the most on the line here.
Concert tickets.
Concert tickets?
Yeah.
What concert?
U2 at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, man.
U2?
Yeah, U2.
You got concert tickets?
I didn't even know they were back on tour. Bono's okay now?
I don't know if he's going to be able to play the guitar ever again, he said. But, yeah, he's okay. He's okay enough to perform. And she is really excited. Like, she doesn't know she's going, but she's been looking forward to it. So,
well, I can't tell my wife that you've done this because it's going to make my gift look really bad.
I know. I apologize. It's my Valentine's Day present too. Like, I'm gonna be equally as pumped. So everybody go out there and surprise your significant other. Scott, would you like to share now?
I took her to see Alton Brown a couple weeks ago. That's like her U2, basically.
Who's
you
that?
Guys give you experiential gifts, all right.
Right.
My wife's getting jewelry, so
Al, I'm sure when I'm married for as long as you've been married, it will be like, oh, here, well, let's go out to lunch. Anyway, we're going to take as many emails and tweets as we can. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Al Melk, CBS, M-E-L-C. I'm not sure why he didn't just go with Al Melchior, CBS, but hey, you can ask him on Twitter.
How do you spell it?
M-E-L-C-H-I-O-R.
Yeah, that's not how the majority of people spell it.
Okay. And I'm at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. So follow us on Twitter.
I have to note this because you can't see me, Adam.
Yeah.
I didn't even know I was doing this. I have absentmindedly picked up the measuring tape and am pulling it out, freezing it, and then letting it run back in.
Oh, well, probably stop because I think we can hear it in the recording.
Yeah, okay.
So that'd be a good idea.
I'm putting it out of arm's reach.
Let's talk baseball.
Taping.
Let's talk baseball. Here we go. I wanted to talk about Pujols. We didn't really talk too much about him. Right now, based on our two drafts, Albert Pujols going in the third or the fourth round. Now, Scott, when you talked about Adrian Gonzalez, you mentioned that he did a lot of his damage early in the season. Then he hit 8 home runs in the last month of the season. Well, Pujols was great. First 22 games, he hit .293. He slugged .652. He hit 9 of his 28 home runs. That's the first 22 games, he hit a third of his home runs. Last 137 games, he hit .268 with a .318 on base, .434 slugging percentage in 137 games. So should we be worried that Albert Pujols at age 35 is going to be a fantasy bust in 2015?
Well, here's the thing. As the season wore on, as is with many other players, he got older. So the age set in after the first 22 games. No, I don't worry too much about that.
But why?
I do think because of his age, there is some bust potential. But this pattern doesn't especially bother me because they all count. Everybody is streaky to some degree.
And honestly, this doesn't sound as extreme to me as Gonzalez. And even if it is, I mean, it basically, even if we say what he did over his last 137 games is him, well, it's basically in line with my expectations for Gonzalez, and that's about where he's getting drafted. So,
but you didn't like the Gonzalez pick. I guess that's why I brought it up. Like, if you were talking about Gonzalez that way, why not talk about Pujols that way? I'm trying to do the math. It's a 752 OPS in the last 137 games.
Well, I didn't say I was excited about drafting Pujols necessarily. I do think they're in more or less in the same category. I think Pujols' ceiling is a little higher, but he is older, and like Al said, that alone gives him some bust potential, being 35 and having some injury issues the past few years. But you're not wowing me, Adam, with this one. You're not. Sorry.
You know, well, first of all,
I wasn't.
Well, at least I wowed you once. I brought it up because we talked about a lot of guys and we didn't really say if we would be excited about Albert Pujols. So I wanted to come back to him. And I don't know. I just feel like if you could make an argument against Adrian Gonzalez, you could make the same against Pujols. He did a lot of his damage in a short period of the season. But Al, you say, hey, that happens with a lot of guys, which is true. I guess you can kind of get caught up in looking at, oh, well, this month he did this and this month he did this.
And exactly in that voice.
Right. Try to imitate it later. Injuries, news, and notes. Jonathan Lucroy will be out 4 to 6 weeks with a mild hamstring strain, and Milwaukee hoping he'll be ready for opening day. So, what'd you do about Lucroy in your rankings?
Well, nothing yet. The overhaul is coming shortly. When that happens, I imagine it's going to be a pretty mild correction. And I don't even anticipate it's going to affect his ranking. I mean,
Will it affect where you draft him, though?
The projection will be a mild correction. No, honestly, because I my strategy with catchers is to wait anyway. I don't see that I'll be getting him or Posey in very many leagues, if any. So, no.
Round five, yes or no?
I'll say no.
I'll
definitely say
that's
no.
That's borderline for me. It's not a definite no. Depends what else is out there.
Big news for the Cardinals. John Jay, 2-year deal, over $10 million. About time.
Congratulations.
Is he splitting it 50-50 with you? Because that's what a nice guy would do. You talk about how nice he is. Let's see if he pays you back.
Even 90-10, I think, would be nice.
I'll take 90-10. Any day of the week. John Jay, nicest guy in baseball. That's the first reference to that
in
2015.
We'll see.
Garrett Richards, optimistic about being ready for opening day after recovering from knee surgery. He was unbelievable last year, 13-4, 2.61 ERA, about a strikeout per inning, 1.04 whip, and in terms of fantasy points per innings pitched, he was better than Corey Kluber and not much worse than Johnny Cueto.
It's unbelievable where I've been able to get him in our first two drafts. I think like round 14 or round 15 I'm looking at in our roto draft. So I have a feeling that's going to change.
Yeah, and it's a little reminiscent too, more extreme actually, than Cole Hamels this time last year, who missed a little time at the beginning. And he wound up giving plenty of value to people who got him, as I recall, like the 10th round or so.
Yes, good point, but another guy went right in that same range and was in a similar situation, if I remember correctly, and that was Mike Minor. And those two had completely different seasons.
Yeah, well, I guess if you could lay blame to the Minor owners, and I'm not going to, and he actually is a sleeper for me this year, it's that Minor had that one good season in 2013. Hamels was very established going into last year.
So we're talking about Richards.
But Richards is Minor then. In that regard.
The bigger difference for me is Minor had a shoulder issue and Richards it's his knee. So not to say knee has nothing to do with pitching, but it's not as scary to me.
So Richards or Tanaka?
I'll go Richards.
I'll go Richards too.
And that's even if he does miss a month.
Yeah. I'm just terrified of Tanaka. It could happen any day. Any day, Adam.
Richards or Shields? Goes.
Shields.
I'll go Richards. Even if that just means I have to miss out on Shields. That makes sense.
Over to Cuban infielder Yoan Moncada. I'm assuming we pronounce it that way. Could sign with an MLB team in about 2 weeks. Very, very hyped prospect. Going to get a big old signing bonus. Should we be drafting him when he's in the player pool?
Not in single season leagues, I would say, because he's still very young. So I'd say it seems like a long shot he'll be up this year. Dynasty leagues, obviously, he'll be a top target.
Right. He's like Puig potential in terms of, you know, just comparing Cuban prospects.
I would say so, yeah.
Okay. And finally, Seattle signed Ricky Weeks to a one-year deal worth $2 million to play the outfield. Scott, does this have any fantasy significance, Ricky Weeks to the Mariners?
I feel like it's probably going to be another platoon situation like he was in last year, if even that. So maybe an injury opens the door for him to play more, but otherwise you're talking about low-end AL-only material, which is kind of disappointing because on a per-at-bat basis, he pretty much bounced back last season. I would have liked to see him get a starting shot somewhere.
I'm guessing that might be because he, I don't remember, but I'm guessing he may have played almost exclusively against lefties.
Yeah.
Not almost. Well, he played a large percentage of his at-bats were against lefties because mostly he was spelling Scooter Jeanette. But I don't know that it was a clear majority. Okay. 133 against lefties, 119 against righties. But he hit 294 against righties, so I don't know that that really hurt him.
Interesting. Well, yeah. We're going to talk a lot about daily fantasy and FanDuel this year, so I imagine when lefties are on the mound, against Seattle, you might want to look at Ricky Weeks.
What do you think about this concessions idea? Have a condiment at Safeco called Weak Sauce.
Oh,
delayed reaction.
Because his name isn't Weak.
No, it would sort of run
weak
together.
Sauce. Weak Sauce.
Yeah, I get it. Actually, I'll tell you why I'm distracted. There's a TV over Al's right shoulder that I can see on Skype. And I think they were showing a clip of 50 Shades of Grey. And it's obvious reason why a clip of 50 Shades of Grey might be distracting. But I talked to a friend of mine, a girl, who saw it yesterday or 2 days ago. Apparently it's awful. So don't go do that on Valentine's Day, everyone. Now,
go see you too.
I have a lot of – well, no, that's not until July, Scott. I have a lot of emails and tweets to get to, but I also have neglected to bring something up that I personally cannot believe I forgot to talk about, and I feel like I failed myself and the two of you, mostly Al. Al, did you see Vulture.com's ranking of all 121 Billy Joel songs last week?
No, I didn't, because if I had, certainly we would have talked about that by now.
Would you like to guess, and Scott, you can too, what number one was?
Ah, boy. I will say Scenes from an Italian Restaurant.
What an amazing guess. Good for you.
I hit it?
You hit it.
Sing it for me. I'm not familiar with that
bottle
one by the title.
Red.
Bottle of light. There you go. It's a great one, Scott. It's the best Billy Joel song. I would have gone with the number two choice, Only the Good Die Young. But I have no beef with Scenes from an Italian Restaurant.
Yeah. No, I think it's got to be that one.
Where do you think Piano Man ranked?
I'm thinking that's probably number three, no?
15.
Mm.
15.
I'll have to check this out.
It's a pretty cool list.
Sounds like clickbait.
What was
to me?
121.
121, the worst Billy Joel song ever, according to Vulture.com. The Mexican Connection.
I don't know that
it's an
one.
Instrumental. Oh, you know okay, me? How about this? Sorry. Second worst song in Billy Joel's catalog. We Didn't Start the Fire. Agree or disagree?
Second worst? I like that song.
His catalog is way bigger than 121 songs, right?
Yes and no. He didn't include some things, but I think every song released on one of his albums.
I don't think it's one of his better songs, but there's much worse than that.
So here is the one of the lines about it. The biggest problem song for the Billy Joel apologist because it is highly popular and inescapably bad. So much is wrong here. Yeah, it makes good points. It's pretty cheesy, I guess, but come on. How could that be the second?
How does it make
Billy
good
song?
Points? It just gives you an opinion. Like factual evidence.
You have to read it. I'm not going to read it.
Entirely subjective list.
It's an objectively bad
This
song.
Is a waste of our time.
Is it?
Why are you wasting our time, Adam? We have so little time together these days.
Well, then let's make it happen. Here we go. Emails and tweets. CW Sox fan says, on the First Base podcast, did you ever bring up Chris Carter? What if he hits 245? Why didn't we bring up Chris Carter, guys?
Because he'll be in the DH podcast. That probably won't exist. Because that's the only place he's eligible to begin next year.
Yeah, I mean, there's basically three DH-only eligible guys that we'll talk about. So we're going to be talking about him for like 15 minutes on that podcast. That won't exist.
Yeah, it's Ortiz, obviously, and Kenneth Vargas. Those are the other two mixed league relevant DH-only players.
Well, and CWS Sox fan raises a good point because Carter, I think, will very likely get first base eligibility.
Like quickly or when? What do you think?
Well,
not necessarily.
It's hard to know how that's going to shake out between him, Gattis, and I don't think it's clear Singleton is going to begin the year in the minors. So he could still be in the mix there. So someone's going to have to play left field. I don't know.
And Mariznick is probably going to play left field, so I think that increases
his
chances. But
I don't know that anybody's going to play. I don't know that any of them are going to play anywhere every single day, but Carter and Gattis will be in the lineup every day. I feel confident saying that.
Well, if Carter does hit 245, I'm looking at my DHs. So I'm not sure what that puts him with first base, but that would, I think, bring him pretty close to Ortiz in value. Not quite that high, but I've got him projected to hit about 230.
245, I'm assuming you're projecting him for around 30 home runs. That would be a really nice year, right?
Yeah, actually, I've got him projected for 40.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, he hit 37 last year, right?
Yeah, he did.
He'll be better.
So then where should he go? Where should Chris Carter go?
Well, I actually was the one who drafted him in our Roto draft, and I took him in round 11. And it was between Lucas Duda and Carter, if I remember. I was a little concerned about getting a DH-only player for the lack of flexibility later. But that seems like a pretty good spot for a power-only guy. I feel like Mark Trumbo goes in the same range usually. He just went three picks later, as a matter of fact. So round 10, round 11 sounds about right.
I remember being pretty angry when you made that pick. So he was next up on my queue, so I totally concur with the spot to draft him.
Peter Colton says, also did not mention Pedro Alvarez to go with Zimmerman in a first base pool. He will not be the last guy in the pool or the one guy left out of the pool to reference that.
Right, yeah, the pool.
So what's going on with Pedro Alvarez?
Supposed to play first base, so we'll gain eligibility there. Kind of like Ryan Zimmerman. Did we talk about Ryan Zimmerman yesterday? That's the part of the email that threw me.
I think maybe no. Okay, I thought maybe we brought him up and then realized.
They're both going to be first base eligible. And I know I mentioned when we did catchers that Steven Vogt would gain catcher eligibility some point soon. But it's a little different. You know, I just, unless it's a DH-only player, I can't get excited about anybody gaining first base eligibility because they're probably going to be more valuable in the position they were at the position they were already eligible.
Well, then I'll ask you, do you think Pedro Alvarez, third base eligible, can bounce back? He was a top 12 Roto third baseman 2 years in a row going into 2014. In fact, he was number 7 in 2013 in Roto. You know, he was a 30-homer guy with a low batting average.
I think statistically he can definitely bounce back. I need to take a look at my rankings because I don't think I've got him that high in the rankings, but that's probably just about other people leapfrogging him. So, I think he can get back to where he was two seasons ago.
Would you guys take Pedro Alvarez or Trevor Plouffe?
Oh, Alvarez.
Yeah,
I would too.
Alvarez or Headley?
I'll take Alvarez. I'm ranked 15th at third base. I've got Headley ranked 16th. Plouffe 18th.
How about you, Scott?
I don't know where I have Headley ranked, but it's well behind Alvarez.
You have Headley 25th.
Thank you.
Okay, so Alvarez is right behind Matt Carpenter in Roto for Al, and he is right behind Chris Bryant and Pablo Sandoval in Roto for Scott, and just ahead of Brett Lurie for Scott. And as Al mentioned, he's just ahead of Chase Headley for Al. So let's go to an email from Nicholas. Nicholas says, I have made a living over the past few years of finding a breakout shortstop or second baseman in the late rounds of my drafts, like Ian Desmond in 2012, Segura in 2013, Rendon in 2014. which has led me to avoiding drafting a middle infielder in early rounds. Which of the following middle infielders do you think has the best breakout potential in 2015? Danny Santana, Arizmendi Alcantara, Jean Segura, or Jordy Mercer? And, two-parter, do you think Jungho Gong will overtake Mercer as a starter at some point?
Okay, well, I was going to be smart alecky and say my answer to the first question is Marcus Semien, who you didn't include. But all right, of that group, I do like Santana the best.
Simeon's a good pick, and he's going to be affordable. My issue with Santana is that you're probably not going to be able to draft him that late. You're probably talking about single-digit rounds still when he's going off the board, at least on our site. So I don't know. He is my favorite player there, but I guess I'll go Segura over Alcantara just because there's questions about Alcantara's playing time. Of that group, he'd be the one I take.
Would you guys take Segura or J.J. Hardy?
I would take Segura.
So would I.
Segura or Xander Bogaerts?
I would take Bogaerts.
Ooh. I'm pretty sure I've got Segura ranked higher, but that's, yeah, that's, I do. I suppose I would take Segura.
Here is Brett.
Wait. We got a second part of the question to answer.
Jungho Gong.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of wild guessing whether he'll overtake Mercer. I'm going to guess yes, because I don't think Mercer is anything that special.
Neither does Gong.
Yeah, he kind of said he thought he could do better than Mercer, so got off on a good foot there. But I'm going to guess yes. Okay. And that's my wild guess. Well, I'm drafting him in an NL-only league as if he will overtake Mercer.
I'm kind of intrigued by Mercer. I thought he actually had a pretty good season last year.
He did, but I just feel like Gong could be better than just acceptable, you know?
I'm intrigued by Mercer in how I drafted him in one of our drafts. I don't remember which league it was, but it was like I just waited and waited and waited on second base because I didn't like any value, and then finally I was like, okay, I'm going to take a second baseman. I'll take Neil Walker. Maybe he'll hit 18 to 20 home runs.
Neil Walker or Mercer? Are you talking about two different players here?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thank you very much. You're right about Mercer. I am sorry. I was talking about Neil Walker. I'm intrigued by Neil Walker, not by Jordy Mercer. I hate Jordy Mercer.
All right. Well, you're rooting for Gong then.
Jordy Mercer is the worst player ever. Okay, then. Sorry about that mistake. Brett, I guess Brett wants Al to pick a city. Where's Brett from?
Brett is from Kannapolis, North Carolina.
He says, good morning, Zach, Albert Clifford, and Samuel.
That sounds like Saved by the Bell, AC Slater.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you see the Jimmy Fallon Saved by the Bell thing?
I did not.
I did.
What'd you think?
It was fine.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I wasn't a huge
Saved by the Bell fan, so I may have not gotten some of the references.
No, it just wasn't that funny. It's like a lot of the Jimmy Fallon things. Like, they have celebrities, and they're kind of cool, but not really that funny at the end of the day. Here's the question.
Fallon's not really a comedian. He's just kind of an entertainer, which is fine. I mean, it's very different feel his show has from the other late-night talk shows.
Yeah, give him credit for being different. I was wondering if I could get your thoughts on a strategy I'm hoping to apply this year in my league, drafting NL starters over their AL counterparts. It's a mixed league, but I feel NL starters have an advantage in ERA, whip, and strikeouts since they get to face the pitcher or a lesser offensive option later in the game. Does this have any merit?
I mean, he's right. So ERAs and whips are, and Ks, they're all more favorable in the NL. I've never employed that strategy. I guess just because I'm looking at the whole pitcher pool, and probably just by doing that, I'm giving the NL pitchers an edge. But I don't know. I think you probably wind up at the same place, but be interested to see how that works.
Mike Albany has a tweet for us: Captain Crunch, Crave, or Cocoa Puffs?
Ooh,
yeah, that's tough. I think I'd go Captain Crunch.
I gotta say, I've never had Crave before.
Nah, I haven't either. I was
cereal like
too.
Yeah.
Al, you totally lied then.
Yeah, well, but I mean, no, but it was tough. It wasn't tough across all three.
Well, listen, I have not have had Crave, nor had I ever heard of it before this tweet. So I Google imaged it, and it looks damn good.
I've seen the box, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I've seen it in the store.
I've never.
No, nothing compares to Cracklin' O'Brien, though, so if that was a choice here.
O'Brien's dozen?
Are you being serious right now?
I'm being dead serious.
Do you know that that's Dave Richards' favorite cereal and that we had a big thing about that on the football podcast?
I didn't know you had a big thing about it on the football podcast, but it is. I've discussed the greatness of Cracklin' O'Brien with Dave Richard before, yes.
Well, dude, you are wrong about that. Wrong. It's very good, but it has like a weird aftertaste. Anyway, the answer's Captain Crunch. The answer's Captain Crunch.
That's like a litmus paper thing.
You know who likes Cracklin' O'Brien?
Who's that?
Billy Joel.
Probably. Josh Alderodi says, where would Hanley Ramirez rank among outfielders?
Yeah, that's one I can't answer off the top of my head, so I'm looking stuff up.
Matt Holliday or Hanley Ramirez?
My gut says Holliday.
I mean, to me, it's impossible to not even weigh that he would also have shortstop eligibility in that.
Well, you have to, because like, I play in a league in which, it's actually a good league, I like this rule, a player has to make a certain amount of appearances to maintain eligibility. So you can draft him in my league for, and you can play him for a month at shortstop, but if he hasn't made, I think, four appearances or something in the first month, he's an outfielder and that's it. And some people play in those types of leagues. So just for the sake of this.
Is that Swanee's league?
Yeah.
That's the only league I've heard of like that.
No, I've heard of people playing in leagues like that. And in fact, we got two questions that were pretty much the same. And one person wanted to know, for keeper purposes, what kind of value Hanley's going to have after this year when he's only outfield eligible, theoretically.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, it all takes only takes one injury to shuffle things around, and then maybe he goes back to playing shortstop. But the plan is
for it's very unlikely.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, the plan is for him to play outfield, obviously.
Well, I've got him valued very similarly to Holliday, so that's a great comp. I've got him a little ahead of him in Roto and Hanley a little behind Holliday, or actually more than a little behind him in points.
If we're in the oddball scenario where Hanley is outfield only, I will take Holliday instead just because I feel like he's safer.
So who are some outfielders that are around that Hanley Holliday?
Well, that sounds like the right range. Yeah, because then my next outfielder after Holliday, and I know Al and I value this guy very differently, is Cespedes. And I would probably take Hanley over Cespedes. So that seems like the perfect range, actually.
So you would take Hanley Ramirez over, say,
Cespedes. Guess, yeah. I would take him over Dickerson. I don't know that Al would. JD Martinez, Melky Cabrera.
Okay. That group.
By the way, the Red Sox would also take Ramirez over Cespedes. I've got right in the same neighborhood, Alex Gordon, JD Martinez, Charlie Blackman, Melky Cabrera, a couple names that Scott mentioned. So there you go.
Next question is from AB. It says, g'day, lads. Next podcast, would you guys be able to speak a little bit about the differences in importance in having top of the position players based on parameters of the league? For example, in three outfielder leagues versus five outfielder leagues, is there less need for a true number one outfielder? In leagues where there are no corner infield or middle infield positions, is it more or less important to have a top position player versus leagues where there are corner infield and middle infield spots? Go ahead. Deep benches, shallow benches. What might impact whether or not you're going for elite at a certain position?
Well, that's a good I don't know that I'd when I talk about elite outfielders, I don't know that I'd put the strict, okay, true number one outfield designation on it. But I would say that in leagues where there's fewer hitter spots to fill, you distinguish yourself more when you have higher end hitters. That distances you from your competition more. Now, whether or not that's three number two outfielders versus a true number one and two number threes, you know, that's I think probably three number twos would be better if we're getting that specific. But generally speaking, I'm going to go a little more aggressively after upside when there's fewer position spots to fill, because it's true for everybody. So there's more fallback options, and you'd rather get the bigger advantage than play it safe.
So I think with the outfield example, we talk about it all the time. In a five outfielder league, I know, Al, you think it thins out very quickly, and you are prioritizing getting an elite outfielder, right, with one of your first two picks maybe?
I am, and I mean, that logic applies to thinner and deeper formats. But, even more so in a deeper league. I said that backwards. Yeah, in a shallower league, that's going to be more of a priority, because in a deeper league, you can make up not getting the number one outfielder you want by, you know, piggybacking, a 2 and 3 close together and getting a really high quality number three outfielder. And plus, in a shallower league, if you invest a lot in your, say, your number three outfielder, well, that's somebody who's probably going to be easily replaceable mm-hmm. off of waivers, mm-hmm. which is certainly not the case in a five outfielder league.
Yeah, I don't know if it's – I think Scott was touching on this. I don't know if it's like, oh, I got to get a number one outfielder, like one of my 12 best. But you just have to invest earlier in the position when it's a five outfielder league. And, like, for the three outfielder leagues we do, I have no problem waiting a long time to get my third outfielder. And if he's a bust, I'll get it on waivers. There are always good outfielders on waivers. That's a question you have to ask yourself as well. What kind of options are there going to be at the position on waivers in my league?
Now, that's probably the bigger difference is when anytime something gets shallower, you know that your fallback options on waivers are going to be better. So you don't want to settle for middle of the road. It's more something that comes into play later in the draft when you're choosing between a Cole Calhoun type versus a who's a good example, a Jock Peterson type. I would probably rather have the Peterson type. I don't even know that that's true. Maybe Cole Calhoun wasn't a great first example, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Well, would you rather have Cole Calhoun in a five outfielder league, where the outfield options on waivers are not going to be great, and Peterson in a three outfielder league, where if he's a bust, then you just go get someone else?
I buy that. I know we're not playing by ourselves, but I'm buying it.
Yeah. Now, the whole corner infield, middle infield thing, I don't think that really changes the way shortstops and second basemen are taken. I feel like in our drafts, they're taken pretty much the same way, but then there's just like 12 more middle infielders that come off the board later.
That sounds right.
Sound right?
Yeah. Sounds right to me.
Okay. Then we'll go over to Roy's question. Can you explain why players are valued differently if it's a points league versus a roto league? Why does the format change the value of a player?
All right. Well, you know, and the reasons are a little bit different for hitters and pitchers. The commonality is one commonality is playing time. That a Hunter Pence or an Adam Jones type, I think, has even more value in a points league. But then, you know, I know there's other things too that we need to get into.
Well, no, it's just players are evaluated differently in those two formats.
Right.
Like, there's only certain stats that go into making.
Well, I was getting there.
To evaluating a player in a rotisserie league.
Right.
But usually in a points league, the full spectrum of stats, everything you'd find on a player's baseball reference pages are getting some value attached to them. So
the ones that are better at the non-traditional, non-5x5, they're going to be more valuable in a points league.
Yeah.
When the doubles hitters, the guys who walk, the pitchers who get quality starts.
And somebody who's really good in just one or two of the traditional 5x5 categories are going to be more valuable in roto.
Or Trumbo.
So, yeah, Trumbo, Chris Carter, etc. So it's just you have to look at what in your format, how is a player measured, and you have to take into account all of those attributes for a player, depending on your format.
Right, and how much does a strikeout for a hitter count against you? You know, if it's a full point per strikeout. Now our standard leagues are half a point, but if it's a full point deduction for a hitter strikeout, then that really, really has a big effect. Also, how many points is a steal? Our standard is 2 points for a steal and -1 for caught stealing. But if it's only 1 point for a steal, one of the leagues I'm in is 1 point for a steal, that really devalues steals guys in points leagues. Now, we've talked about hitters. What about pitchers? How are they different in terms of points in roto?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing. It's just
different stats.
Other numbers being taken into account. So,
Like what, though? I mean, like it, I know the answer, but I'm letting you.
Well, innings, I guess, would be the main thing.
Yeah.
Like, you get actual points for innings in a points league, when in a roto league, it's just helping to
boost the other counting stats.
It's just helping boost the other counting stats, and it's helping the ratios have more
more weight.
And
yeah.
Quality starts in our standard scoring. Quality
sure.
starts are what,
sure.
3 points?
I think that's right.
Yeah. So you got, and I must stress, you have to look at your league specifics and your scoring system.
I mean, that's what it all comes down to, because you got to know what a player does well within the construct of your league. There's only five things a hitter or pitcher has to do well to be great in a rotisserie league, but there's a heck of a lot more in a points league.
Here's a tweet from Cam. Will Cole Hamels get traded before the season begins?
I mean, I just, my gut says that no, but it will be maybe soon after, or, you know, actually very few trades do happen early in the season, but could be like a June trade.
Does his status of being on the block affect his fantasy value at all, Cole Hamels?
I don't see how it does. I'm not anticipating that. And let me just sort of amend my earlier answer, because there was a report yesterday that the Phillies got, and I sort of like the way that this was phrased in the report. They got four real offers for Hamels out of eight total offers, so four were bogus offers. but these things can escalate quickly, but it seems like the market for Hamels has, or at least the Phillies' perception of the market for Hamels up to this point has been pretty slow. So that's why I'm thinking maybe he won't get dealt before opening day.
A tweet from Neil Asnan. Mookie Betts versus J.D. Martinez. Who you got?
I got J.D. Martinez.
Me too.
Let me give you a J.D. Martinez stat. You can mull it over and tell me if it means anything to you.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He will be playing right field this year.
That is... Yeah, I think that's right. I'm trying to... Yeah, because Cespedes will be left.
Okay. Well, here's a stat for you. 338, 378, 545. That's a slash line. As I'm not going to tell you, either a left fielder or a right fielder. 338, 378, 545, compared to 225, 270, 471.
Is that a last year stat line?
Yeah. One of them is as a left fielder. One is as a right fielder. Which one do you think is his right field split? 338, 37, or not split, slash line. 338, 378, 545, or 225, 270 on base, 471 slugging.
Well, Torii Hunter was playing right field primarily last year, so Martinez saw very little time there, so I'm going to guess it's the one that was out of line.
It's the crappy one!
Yeah.
You got it.
I mean, it's nothing to me.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah.
I think he's really interesting. If he performs like he did last year, I'd say that's first, second round pick good. Right?
Yeah.
Not to say I'm taking him there, but I'm just based on what he did last year.
No, like what he did, I mean, particularly if you just take the starting point from when he became a regular to the end of the season, that really puts it into context how good it was. I mean, those kinds of numbers are what you're hoping to get from Yasiel Puig, who you're taking in round two. So if he does that, he's a stud. And he's not being drafted as a stud even in our league, but I've been looking around at rankings on other sites recently, and I've seen some serious J.D. Martinez detractors out there. Ones who rank him so that he'll be drafted maybe in like round 15 or something, which, I mean, that's crazy to me, considering how good he was last year.
What are the arguments against him?
Well, he came out of nowhere. He doesn't have great plate discipline. That's about it.
Okay. You guys are buying in, though.
I am buying it.
Yeah, I mean, the play discipline has me concerned a little, but...
So let me ask you this. Let's say there's a bunch of preseason, I always say preseason, spring training hype on J.D. Martinez, and he starts going in the third round. Is that going to be too early for you?
That's too early. That's too much risk for the reward. Yeah.
Fourth
too
round.
Too early.
Okay.
I have him ranked what I obviously I think where I have him ranked is just right, and that puts him going in round 7 or 8.
Do two more here, guys. You ready?
Yep.
A.W. Mathis, rank the following risk reward starting pitchers: Archer, Stroman, Paxton.
What are we classifying these pitchers as?
Risk reward.
Oh, okay. Archer, Stroman, and Paxton.
I don't. You know, I don't see Stroman as really very risky. So, and I do think I like him the best. So I'm going to go Stroman, Archer, Paxton.
Me too.
And Corey has two quick questions. He says, "Dear Orlando, Kansas City, and Charlotte," and he says, "Al should get this."
Okay, this kind of freaks me out because those are three city magazines that I was the online editor for like 15 years ago.
You got it. Dig, dig, dig. He said it's in your bio. Or you just said you live there or something like that. But this is taken straight from your bio.
That's funny. I don't even know what bio, but all right. At least now I know where it's from. It's not just, you know, somebody who's been, snooping on me.
Two quick questions. Which spring training invite the biggest fantasy potential impact? That's number one. Go ahead.
Well, I can't answer that with any...
I'm not sure I can even definitively remember. Because I assume he's talking about NRIs, right? Not roster invites. Right.
Yeah, I'd have to see a whole list of them to say this is the one with the most fantasy potential. But...
God, it seems like I should come up with somebody who's kind of... And in fact, I know there's players. I've seen them get the non-roster invites. I'm thinking, that player's got an opportunity, and I can't think of a single one right now.
Yeah. Kelly Johnson could play a lot for the Braves in either left field or second base or third base.
That's a really good one.
Potentially, yeah.
I can't believe that Brandon Beachy is still out there. Does that surprise you?
Not really.
It's from what I last heard. It's on him. He was reportedly very close to accepting an offer. In fact, I think the reports said he had picked a team. They just didn't announce the team. And then the next day it was, well, I'm going to wait until February. So I think he's just not getting quite as much money as he wants to get. And he wants to have a chance to show what he can do first, I guess. I don't know. it is kind of surprising.
And the second question from Corey was, what's your nomination strategy in an auction? Nominate the most expensive or maybe grab a personal favorite? What do you do?
Mix it up.
It really depends on where you are in the auction, too. But, yeah, I don't think there's, like, a hard and fast rule that you should nominate a guy you don't want versus you should nominate a guy you do want, because it's really you just have to get a grasp for the timing of things. You have to get a sense of what all is left at a position, what's going to be left at a position, because basically you don't want to find yourself in a position where you keep nominating guys you don't want, and the guy you want is the last one nominated at a certain tier, at a certain position, and then everybody's bidding like crazy on him.
Or just the end game, too, if you only have a dollar or two to spend, and there's somebody you really want, and maybe you don't have the second dollar to go, so you have to play the waiting game and wait for somebody else to nominate. So there's all kinds of little things like that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, Go ahead.
No, it's just the amount of thought that goes into nominating and bidding in an auction. It's a beast. I used to write a strategy column every year, and it would be like 3,500 words long, and it was just a monster to read and a monster to write. And I don't think we do it anymore. But we are going to have some auction strategies for you in a more bullet point form later this spring.
And we'll definitely do a podcast with auction strategies. And just a couple things I wanted to say about that. The majority of my nominations, at least early on, are guys that I think will go for a lot of money that I don't want. So, you know, let's say I already had a first baseman or something like that, and I don't have any interest in Rizzo now just because I've already got, you know, Pujols, whatever. I'll nominate him just to get some money off the board. Or I don't like Troy Tulowitzki, so I'll nominate him just to get $30 off the board or something like that. I do that a lot. But $1 bids are very valuable late in the draft. You can get some good players for $1. But if you only have two, it's very risky to nominate someone for $1. Because if someone else goes two, you can't go three. So just consider that. If you only have $2, you might be better waiting for that person to get nominated for $1 by someone else, and then you can go $2 on them.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, I feel like I heard that not too long ago.
You said that? I knew you said something similar to that, Al, but well, I didn't think you said that.
You probably said it better.
You did say it better.
Okay, good. well, you're welcome then.
And I'll sort of steal your tip there, because not only can you do that early, but a thing that I do often is if I've just taken a player at a position, that then the next time I'm up to nominate, I will nominate my top ranked player at that position because I don't need them.
Right.
And I'll,
right.
Then I'll take money off the board.
And here's the thing I like to do early in auctions while everybody else is throwing out the obvious names. I'll throw like a kind of a fringe sleeper out there, but not my favorite and not somebody who, you know, it's borderline he's going to get picked up at all, just because I want to see what he'll go for. I want to see where everybody's mindset is, if they're so focused on the elite guys that they're not even going to bother with him at all, mm-hmm. or if they're going to overpay for him just because, hey, it's early, I got money to spend, let's use it.
Bottle of red. Bottle of white. All right, thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. That's Scott White and Al Melchior. Have a great weekend. Happy Valentine's Day, guys. So we didn't do the player we love. We always do a player we love.
Oh, man.
I already know mine.
Can we do it on the spot?
Gosh, the pressure.
I don't want to do it now because, you know, it's 48 minutes into the podcast. People might have tuned out. Next week, when we come back, probably on Tuesday since Monday's a holiday, we'll do our post-Valentine's Day player we love for 2015.
Sounds like a plan, man.
Mine's left-handed. See if you can figure it out over the weekend. Thank you for listening, everybody. What was your guess?
I said that narrows it down.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend, and buy you two tickets for your significant other. Bye.